My name is Joseph, and I am an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA, and since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Kareth and Giroux, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers in case we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Leanna will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Leanna. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Shai will read the steps.
Hi, my name is Shai. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol. Our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admitted. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs.
Elaine will read the traditions.
Good evening. My name is Elaine, and I'm an alcoholic. The traditions. Tradition 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. Tradition 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Tradition 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. As an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, prosperity, prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Tradition 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever unprofessional, non-professional, but our service centers may... Sorry, I'm having a problem with my contacts. But our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Tradition 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Tradition 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. Tradition 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Matt.
Hi, my name is Matt. I'm an alcoholic. And my sponsor's sitting 5 feet in front of me looking at me with a big smile. So, how did you get that seat? You came in late. I saw you. Wow. I was all cool until I saw that. Anyway, my sponsor's name is Duncan. His sponsor's name is Stacy. His sponsor's name is Tom. I don't know who sponsors Tom. But I was thinking about this. This morning, it's important to know who's sponsoring your sponsor and who's sponsoring him and the lineage and the connection that you have. Additionally, this is my home group, as a lot of you know. There's a lot of new faces here, so maybe you don't know me because I come every other week and I sit in the balcony. But I've been coming to this group for 7 years. I've watched it... get bigger. When I first started coming here, there was nobody sitting over here. The balcony was empty, and there was no rows over there. It was just kind of filled up in here. And the reason I mention that is because the meeting keeps growing. And the meeting keeps growing is because the message that's here works, right? If you're an alcoholic. The message that's here is very simply the solution for an alcoholic that is outlined in the big book in the first 164 pages. And it's here in this room that they really try to keep the focus of this meeting to be that solution, which is why I come here, why I remain coming here, because I need that solution. I can't have a watered-down version. I can't have any wiggle room because I will take what I think is the other way. So I'm very grateful that the people that attend this meeting on a weekly basis, the people that come and go, I'm very grateful that they keep that message alive because it keeps me from drinking. So I'm an alcoholic, right? We're all alcoholics. What does that mean? I can't start taking alcohol, or if I drink, I don't have a choice the amount of alcohol that I'm going to consume, right? I don't have any control. I can't go out for a couple of drinks with my buddies, say it's getting late, I'm going to go home, I got to work tomorrow. I go out for a couple of drinks and I stop when I physically cannot move anymore. That's my experience, right? So that's what I'm doing here. It's not like I had some problems in life and I thought this was a good self-help program. I couldn't not drink. Not only could I not stop drinking once I started drinking, but I had no choice whether I was going to start drinking if I was in that drinking thing. I would say all the time, I'm not going to drink tonight. I got to do this thing tomorrow. You know, I'm not going to drink tonight. I have something else, whatever. And I would always wind up drinking. Always. Always. I had absolutely no power at all. So that's what I'm doing here. Now, before I got to this room, I came to AA, and I stopped drinking, and it worked for a while. And I didn't do the steps. I did some of them. And my life got a little better, but not really, sort of. Then I went to therapy, had some outside issues, I thought, you know. It was all this stuff was going on, because I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't really know about the 12 steps, really. I mean, I saw them in every meeting, but I never read them. And I wound up going back out again. And, you know, because somebody told me maybe you're not an alcoholic, you know, somebody who was a professional, whatever. And I just, the minute he said that, I was like, yeah, maybe I'm not. Yeah, yeah, I have all these other problems. Yeah, this is, I can't believe I haven't been drinking for 5 years. This is ridiculous. What am I thinking? And so I went back out, and it was okay for like a week or two. You laugh, but it was okay. And I really thought, you know, I went out the first time, and this should have been a signal. Like, you know, the first time I went out, I had a double. Had a double Grey Goose, so it couldn't be a single. It had to be a double. That should have been a sign right there, but it wasn't. And because I got on the airplane, had one more drink, went to Vegas, and didn't drink that night or the next day, I was like, hey, wait a minute. Maybe I'm not an alcoholic. Because it took a little time to, you know, kick back in. But once it did, and I kind of realized that, like, wow, I am an alcoholic. I don't have any control over this. It was not so easy getting back, you know. And the second time, I mean, it got really, really, really bad. I couldn't get more than 90 days together. I couldn't find the solution. I was miserable. I got 5 minutes. Excellent. Thank you. And I just could not get. I couldn't get it. I couldn't get it together. You know, I was on medication for bipolar disorder. All this stuff was going on. Speak into the microphone. Sorry. And I really had a hard time getting back. And then the last night I drank, I didn't really drink that much. I just drank a few beers because I wanted to go to sleep, and I hadn't slept in a few days, and we all know about sleeping problems. And that was it. And I woke up that morning, and I was like, wow, I really got to go back to AA. And I was really, really desperate at a really low spot. I became suicidal for, like, you know, 24 hours. I obviously didn't kill myself, but I really thought that, like, it was either that. Like, I thought it was out of options because I thought I tried AA, you know, because I went to meetings and I didn't drink. So I thought I tried AA and it didn't work. Just to speed things up, through a series of events, I wound up seeing a couple of guys that were, you know, kind of like me and were no longer like me. They were happy. They were smiling. They were in the meeting instead of outside smoking cigarettes. And I asked them what they were doing, you know, and they all told me the same thing. They told me their sponsor is Duncan, and they're going through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as they're outlined in the big book, like exactly like that. And I was like, what is going on here? This is really weird. And but I was so broken and so desperate that, you know, I went and I asked Duncan to sponsor me. And I was willing to do anything he told me to do because I was that desperate. And, you know, we started. He asked me if I would do five things, if I would, I can't remember what they are, but basically, if I would get a home group, wait, if I would get a home group, if I would take a service position at that home group, if I would take direction without debate, which I was like, whoa, wait a minute. I'm not doing that, but I agreed to that. If I was willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol, and if I would freely give away what was being so freely given to me. So I agreed, and off we went on the journey. And we did this thing. We read the big book, which to me, I was like, wow, I never did this before. And we went through the steps, and lo and behold, after being in and around AA for 8 years or so, like, I found the directions to get sober. Couldn't believe it. I really couldn't believe it. And from day one, yeah, I was pretty cloudy. But from day one in that book, there was like little messages of hope, like, you know, there is a solution, and, you know, how many hundred women, you know, have recovered from alcoholism. I'm like, wow, this is real. And every week we would get together and read the book, and I followed the instructions, and little by little, I got sober. The fear, the intense fear and anxiety that I lived with for what seemed to be my entire life kind of like fell away. I didn't know that was my alcoholism. You know, I began to lose my fear of people. You know, I kind of became look people in the eyes, and all this kind of great happened. The fog, the great fog that I lived my life in for years, lifted. And so you could say I had a spiritual experience. And I finally found the solution which I needed, because I'm an alcoholic, you know. And the solution that I've been looking for my entire life was in that book. I had gone to therapists. I had, you know, numerous people telling me to go here and there. You need to talk to this one, read that book, try getting a job, maybe go to the gym, you know, maybe lay off the hard stuff, just have beer. Or, you know, I mean, I tried everything. I tried, you know, succeeding in a job, dressing better, looking better, everything. None of it worked, right? I tried everything. Thank you. 1 minute. So if you're new, if you're coming back, if you have 5 or 6 years and you feel like you get it but not really, and you're thinking about drinking, talk to somebody in this room before you leave or before you go out and drink, right? Or if you've been around for a while, it's just not get involved in the 12 steps and then make your decision, you know, after you go through the steps, whether Alcoholics Anonymous is for you or not. Because I went out before doing that, and I didn't. I could be standing here with 15 years. I could be the 30-minute speaker. But I didn't do that. So learn from my mistakes. Thank you all. Thank you, Atlantic Group. This is the best thing in the world. Thanks.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Elise.
Hi, I'm Elise. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, AG. Just some stats. My sober date is January 2nd, 2009. Atlantic Group is home. My sponsor is Davida. Her sponsor is Stephanie, and so on. A little about my experience, and I've had a lot. I grew up in a upper middle class Jewish religious home. Non-alcoholic parents. There was never partying, alcohol, except for on Friday night and Saturday, and that was sweet wine. I didn't really drink. The first time I can remember really experiencing what alcohol did was when I was in Israel. I lived in Israel my freshman year of college. And like it says in the big book, the first time I had alcohol, I really felt like I had arrived. I lost all my inhibitions. Fear just melted away. I was fun and funny and all the things that I wanted to be. And so I drank with friends. We went out. It was the fun thing to do. That's what we did. I had a good time. It didn't seem like it was causing any trouble. And then I came back to New York for college, and I continued to drink with friends. I remember my mom asking me, you know, do you do anything but drink? And I got so mad at her. I was like, well, everyone drinks. But in fact, everyone didn't drink. I just surrounded myself with people that did. And after I graduated from college, I started working. I got a job in the fashion industry and started working. And the one thing that I do need to say is I never liked the taste of alcohol, ever. But I liked what alcohol did to me. And so my favorite drink was a shot because I didn't really have to taste it, and it got the job done really quick. So that was my go-to drink. And after college, I got a job in the fashion industry, and I met my would-be boyfriend, who lived a life that was completely opposite from how I grew up. He drank all the time. There was always a party. And I loved it. I gravitated towards it because it was the complete opposite of how I grew up. And slowly but surely, alcohol just crept in, and it became something that I did on a daily basis. I don't ever remember at the end of a day not having a cocktail or two or three or four. And slowly but surely, consequences began to come. I used to call out sick on Mondays especially. And I remember after a three-day binge of alcohol and some other things, I called in sick on Monday, and then Tuesday at work, we were getting ready to have a meeting, and I went into the bathroom and proceeded to pass out cold on the floor. And my then coworker, who is now my boss, came with me to the hospital. They had to call 911. And I remember him in the ambulance asking me what I was doing. And his eyes were just like saucers when I told him. And but I will tell you that this program works, and if nothing more, I'll have 10 years at my job in January, so that's a miracle in itself. Shortly thereafter, I stopped, you know, I kind of cooled it on the alcohol front for a little while, but we have built-in forgetters, and so slowly but surely, I started drinking only wine, and only wine turned into pints of vodka really, really quickly. Yeah, pints, guys. And one Saturday night, my roommate came home and found me passed out cold on the bathroom floor. She couldn't wake me up, and she called my brother, who couldn't wake me up. And I woke up in the psych ward of St. Luke's with a doctor asking me if I tried to commit suicide because my blood alcohol level was above a 0.3. That led to my first trip into detox. And after that, I really wanted to get sober. I was really, really scared. And so I started going to some AA meetings on the West Side. And while I was going, I really was on the fringe of AA. I wasn't in the middle of it, thank you. And I was kind of doing the bare minimum. And I was lying to everyone that cared about me. I was telling people that I was going to meetings, like my parents, my friends, my therapist. I was lying. I would come and count days, and I would be chugging vodka as soon as I got home. I was pretty much lying to everybody, and most importantly, to myself. I remember I emailed someone I had met uptown who brought me to my first AG meeting, and it was a Tuesday night. I was terrified. You guys were happy, and you were so together, and I thought there was no way that I could ever be anything like you guys. And so I started coming to AG, and I got a sponsor, but again, I wasn't willing to go to any lengths. I was just skimming by. I wasn't getting a service commitment. I wasn't doing the work the way I should. I was giving a lot of lip service without anything behind it. And I was wondering why I wasn't getting any better. Go figure. So after that, it just went on for quite some time, and my world was getting smaller and smaller and smaller. I was isolating. I had stopped hanging out with my friends because they were worried about me, and how dare they be worried about me and tell me that I should stop drinking. Like, they were drinking too. But I was the one that was having to get taken home. I was the one that couldn't remember what I did the night before. And this behavior basically led to my second trip to detox in 2 years. My coworkers actually were the ones that told me I really needed to go. And after my second trip to detox, I looked at things really differently. My world had just gotten so small. Nobody trusted me. I didn't have any kind of relationship with my family. They loved me, but they didn't trust me. I had done away with a lot of my friendships. And I realized that, you know, I needed to do something. And so I tried more diligently. I had actually, I had split with my first sponsor. She basically had told me that if I wasn't willing to be honest, then how could she help me? And Randy, you don't know how much you have helped me. And when I look at my big book today, and I see all the notes, I couldn't thank you anymore. DaVita became my second sponsor, and today I'm honest, and that was really, really hard for me. It was hard for me to open up. It still is hard for me to open up. This is really, really hard. And I take direction. I take direction especially when I don't want to take direction because my best ideas got me right here. So I try and listen to what she tells me. I know that she's talking from experience and from love. I try to take one foot in front of the other and do the next right action. I get involved in service. I have two service commitments. I jumped in with 2 feet into AG. I love you guys. You guys are my home group, and you have saved my life. You know, to the newcomer, all I can tell you is if you're sitting here and you're uncomfortable and you don't think you should be here, chances are you're exactly where you should be. Just get a sponsor, jump into step work, pray, 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 pray. I remember prayer was really, really difficult for me. And I remember one thing Davida told me was even just get a connection, even if you have to pray for the willingness to pray, pray. And today, it's a part of my everyday life. I couldn't imagine my life without it. Fellowship is really, really important. The people in this room, some of you, Nicole, Jen, so many of you have become such an integral part of my life. I love you. So I guess, you know, stick with it. And thank you very much for my sobriety.
Our main speaker tonight is Jimmy J.
My name is Jimmy. I'm a grateful alcoholic. Hi. I love how the mic guy won't touch the water and the water guy won't touch the mic. I love that. I must, everybody's got a job here. It's great. It's great. My sponsor told me way back, whatever group you go to, do what they do. You know, I had a tendency to try to change. How's this? Better? Do whatever they ask, you know? And what I noticed was that, and thank you, by the way, the two speakers before. My first sponsor was Tombstone Tim, who I'm sure most of you never heard of, but you might in a minute. But Jack Keegan, Ray O'Keefe was his sponsor, and Jack passed away, and my present sponsor is Pat Lynch. I'm a member of the Bedford Village Group in Westchester County presently, and the date of my last drink is March 8th, 1980. Now I want to tell you my interest. There's so many things I want to talk about, but the big book says we talk about, in a general way, how it was, how you got here, and the way it is today. My real interest is that whole period of time, all you guys stood up, who had 2 days, who had 17, who had... My interest is you. People in AA with time, some of us, can sometimes think during our time in AA that the only thing that should be talked about, thank you, is recovery. Only recovery. If it was left to us, you get up here and you say, well, the first day I came to AA, and then you go from there. But what happens about all them people that stood up and raised their hand earlier? Sometimes that's why we need that identification. When I was new in AA, if you were tall, I would listen to you. If you had a big family, you know, things that spark my interest. Maybe those of you who are school teachers might find interest in a school teacher, etc. And that's how I started to identify with maybe I am like that person speaking, him or her. I don't care if it was a little old lady. She said things that reminded me of what was happening in my life. So let me get to that. I grew up in the South Bronx. I have heard many people up in meetings say they came from the South Bronx, and after the meeting I asked them where they lived, and they lived in Riverdale. That's really like more South Scarsdale than... And I would inform them of that. If you go over the Willis Avenue Bridge now, which is a new Willis Avenue Bridge, just on the other side, when you get off the Willis Avenue Bridge, that is 134th Street. I grew up on the block before. There's a McDonald's there now. When I grew up, there was a Breakstones company. And my life, I'm looking at some of you. Some of you may have lived the life I lived. I'm the youngest of 10 kids, 5 boys, 5 girls. I guess I don't have to tell you I'm Catholic. St. Jerome's, 138, the 4-0 precinct across the street, and a bar on the third corner. You could live your whole life right there on those four corners. I grew up in what I believe my neighborhood drank. I don't know if that's such a thing, but it appeared that way. In the summer, people were on a fire escape, on a stoop. Everybody looked out the window. And if your father needed you, they would whistle. And even if I was on 134th, 135th, a guy coming by would say, "Hey, Janta, it's your father." They would know the whistle. This is like before beepers. And you would go back and say, "Here I am." We sang doo-wops in the hallway. Those of you that don't know what that is, ask the gray-haired people. It's not like Eminem. It's further back. There was doo-wops. There was Johnny Pumps. There was... I put cardboard in my shoes to cover the hole. The best was the top of a cereal box. It would kind of slide in a shoe just like it belonged. And you'll go to school, try not to step in a puddle because it would eat up the cardboard and hit your sock. That's how we lived. I was born in the house. 47 Bruckner Boulevard, third floor. I was born there, and it's still there. Cops came to my house a lot. Being the youngest of 10, we didn't know we were poor. Everybody was the same, just the way it is. You had one roller skate, you took it apart, and you made a scooter. Roller skate in the front, roller skate in the back, you take out the rubber, you lean, it goes until you hit a crack. And if you think I got hurt, you should see the kid that was in the box, what happened to him, you know? Stickball, stickball, morning to night, come home before the lights go out. I just heard something during the announcement. What you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here. My mother said that to us. She wasn't an AA. She was Irish. She was 4'11". Her maiden name was Madigan. My father said, "There she is, Madigan, you know?" Don't you dare open your mouth about anything that happens in this house. You don't say nothing to nobody. Try going to AA with that attitude, you know? They took my grandmother out of the house to the hospital, Lincoln Hospital, and my friends on the block, Junior and Reggie, said, "Hey, Jimmy, they just took your grandmother to the hospital." I said, "It wasn't my grandmother." Who made somebody like that? My father said things, maybe you've heard these. "Jimmy, you want to cry? Come here. Let me give you something to cry about." You think about it for a moment. Is this like a good thing? You know. My mother would go in the kitchen. I would jump in her chair. You remember wing chairs? If you were a kid, you could hide in them. She'd come back and she'd say, "Jimmy, would you jump in my grave that fast?" And I... What are these people, natives? Where does this stuff come from? The stuff. She always wet us with holy water, especially when it rained. "Stay away from the window. Bless yourself. I might as well go outside. Stop. Stop with the holy water, you know?" She'd tell us, "Get off the phone. The lightning's going to get you." I spoke to my sister Loretta in Selden, Long Island last week. She said, "Jimmy, I got to hang up. It's lightning." I said, "Loretta, there's no wire. Mama was wrong. Ooh, the lightning's going to come through." And that's what you guys have to work with, people like us now. We moved out of the South Bronx. We moved upstate. We moved to the Morris Park, the North Bronx, where there were trees there and stuff. But the people in the South Bronx said, "What's it like up there? State police?" I said, "You got to see it. There's horses. You got to come up, you know?" I'm in a new neighborhood. I feel uncomfortable. I guess I didn't tell you enough about all the uncomfortability, but if you're in this room, you already know about it. Felt like I didn't belong. I tell you, I come from 10 kids. We sat at a dinner table. The older ones would look at me and say, "Jimmy is adopted." You know, that's how we had Irish fun. We used to do stuff like that, you know? God forbid you had like a cold sore. "Oh, you got impetigo. You got, you know, all kind of..." If there was ever something really wrong with you, you're in trouble in my family. I'll tell you that. Anyway, we're in the North Bronx, and these guys are drinking, so I'm drinking. I didn't particularly like it, the way it tasted. If I want something nice to drink, I really think the answer is a vanilla shake. I really do. But back then, I'm with them, two guys, and I tell you this for a reason, which you'll see. I'm 13, 14 years old. We're drinking. We're coming over a bridge. We're in a fight. We're in a fight because there was a large group like this there saying bad things about people's mothers, etc. But when you're a young guy and you have a half a load on or whatever you want to call it, and it was only three of us, me and two, and we were walking towards them, something tells you you can't turn around and go back to where you were. You got to keep going. It's stupidity is what it is. It's youth. And we walked through them, and there was a fight. So next thing you know, everybody's hitting everybody. Things are going on. We run down to a park on White Plains Road, which is called Five Corners. And we're in that park, and he said, Jimmy, remember when you had that guy? And, yeah, remember when you hit that guy? And I told that story for years. I told that story. I went in the Navy. I come home. I'd see them two guys in a bar. Jimmy, remember the night? It was a lie. We were attacked. We were beat up. We lost. I lost a shoe, a hush puppy. So that tells you about 63, maybe, you know? My biggest problem is, how am I going to go home to Madigan with one shoe? Stuff costs money. We didn't have it, you know? My only point in telling you that story is drink, drank, drunk, lied, trouble. 14. Could happen to anybody. Let me make sure. You know, if I could just get in a Sammy Gompers for auto mechanics, I won't do this no more. Please, God, help me get into Gompers on Southern Boulevard. I couldn't wait to get in. I couldn't wait to get out. Maybe if I join the Navy, I'll straighten out like my brothers before me. Couldn't wait to get in. Couldn't wait to get out. And when I got out, maybe if I get married. I'll tell you about that in a minute. So I joined the Navy when I'm 17 years old, and different kind of drinking. It was during Vietnam. I got orders to what back then was called WestPAC, which meant Western Pacific, which meant the Gulf of Tonkin. I was 17, 18. I was going to be 19, and my family had a party for Jimmy. And we were drinking, and they were singing doo-wops, and the next thing you know, I was in the bed upstairs, not at Jimmy's party, just family and friends were. But that's understandable. Come on. You know, you're going to Vietnam. The word we used in the Bronx, maybe you heard it, it's called a scared. I was a scared. That's what we called it. So I was a scared, and what happened was the ship I was on is the Franklin D. Roosevelt caught fire. They lost seven men. They limped back to port, and I got on it, and instead we went to the Mediterranean. So you never know what the next day holds for any of us. In Spain, we drank out of these kidney-shaped looking things. You hold like this. It was a weird shape. Some of you are shaking your head. I guess you know what it is. There's a strange thing about drinking that stuff like sangria and stuff. I sang in Barcelona and Palma, Mallorca at a festa, whatever, La Bamba. That's a Spanish song. I do not speak Spanish. When you drink sangria, you can speak Spanish. If you're in Palma, Mallorca. I've been to weddings where, as you know, Irish people cannot dance, but as you drink, you can do the river dance. Amazing how it's unbelievable how it just comes to you as the night goes on. That has been my experience. You know what? This drinking and stuff's got to stop. I got out of the Navy. I work for the phone company. Doesn't everybody in the phone company drink? Come on. Everybody in Con Edison drinks. You know that. So let me see if I could become a cop. Then I won't drink. So I do. The drinking was different. 4 to 12s became 4 to 4 and this and that. And maybe if I get married, I asked someone if they wanted to get married, they said yes. At my age, those of you that are younger now, thank God, when I was 20, you got married about 20. Otherwise, you're either ugly or nobody wants you or that's what you thought, you know? So right away, I thought getting married was like playing house. You have your own TV, you do what you want. I thought this, that back then, I thought. I could drink when I want, frosted mug in a refrigerator, I thought then. Anyway, I'm getting married, and I said to my brother John, John, I guess cold feet. I really don't think I want to get married. He said, Jimmy, don't get married. I said, I have to get married. They gave her a shower. Now, I don't know what kind of alcoholism you guys have, but we don't like trouble. You know, my alcoholism, I don't want trouble. You know, her mother would have been over that by now, and now it costs me $1,090 a month for life, you know? But that's okay. That's okay. It's not about marriage. It's about being drunk and stupid. It's about. And you know what? Maybe if I have kids, I'll stop this craziness of drinking. Let me see if I could have kids. You're not supposed to see if you could have kids. Alcoholics are the only ones that see if they could have kids. You want to see if you go to a doctor. You can't. You can. We can help you. Now, if you're an alcoholic, let me see. I was married a year. I had twins. I had two kids. I was married a year. Maybe this will straighten me out. I have not found that yet to be the cure for this disease of ours. I had twin daughters. I was a cop. I had a, let me tell you what happened during that period of time. I did well on a promotional list somehow to be a sergeant, very young. And what happened was I, what they call died number one on the list. They promoted, there was a federal injunction against our particular list, and they promoted a friend of mine, Rufus Mitchell, who is still a good friend today. They promoted him instead and to fill a quota. This is in the 70s. So I went out, and I got an afro. I used to have hair. I had a nice, big, high afro. My hat would not go on it. Uniform. I walked into work like, hey, how you doing? Hey, how's it going? And they just looked. Nobody said nothing. Thank God they didn't promote me. Now, those of you who think this has to do with anything but alcoholism, it doesn't. I pulled some just to do it. Thank God they didn't promote me. At that time, thank God, a lieutenant on my job, we were going to an oldies party, said, Jimmy, my wife, his wife, said, if we all put a rinse in our hair, 2-3 showers, it's gone, you're back to normal. We all did it. We had black hair. We had leather jackets. We had cigarettes in our shirt. We had a handkerchief around our head. We went to this oldies party, doo-wop, doo-wop. It was great. 2-3 showers, they're normal. I liked it. I liked it so much I dyed my hair blue-black. And I walked into work like, hey, how you doing? How's it going? And they would just look. And I had a captain that say, Jimmy, who are you this week? That's what it was coming to. Because they weren't trying to fix the inside. I figured, let's deal with the outside. I was doing traffic in a busy city street. Me and another friend of mine, Weldon, who's no longer with us, was in AA a very short time. That's why I'm interested in you guys that stood up. You are our life's blood. You're going to be here for me when my bad days come, too. We need you. Anyway, me and Weldon doing traffic, and this Italian guy had a very big Lincoln, and he had a trailer, you know, you see on the construction sites, and he invited us in, and he gave us steak. He said, you guys are doing a great job for me. We said, oh, thanks. He gave us steak, and he gave us wine. And I figured it out. The next 3 years, I became Italian. I'm not Italian. I traded in my Ford Pinto wagon, which is what you have when you have kids. You go to Pathmark, you put the seat down, you put a stroller in. That's what you have. I traded it in, and I bought a Cadillac Eldorado. It had a red horn on the mirror, came with the car, with a crown. I wore a lot of fake jewelry. I didn't go to bars as much. I went to restaurants. I said things like, hey, saluto tutte guana. Saluta gendanone. And I tell people, hey, don't touch his money. Take it from my money. What does that have to do with drinking, what I just told you? What does that have to do with alcoholism? Everything. Everything. I haven't been Italian since then until this moment. you know? So I went to a policeman's funeral. I'm telling you this because I had trouble with drinking. I got to straighten out. I got to do something. I went to the priest. I used to see the priest on the side like it was a drug deal or something. You know, hey, Father, I'll meet you behind the church. I don't want nobody to see me. I know what's wrong with me. Too many dead people. I'm going on coils, and I'm sick of it. Went to the doctors. I told you I had five sisters, right? I go to weddings. I go to parties, and they're my sisters. Another one, and I'd hear them. They whisper. You know when the older women whisper, hey, but I would hear little. I'd hear about night sweats. I said, that's me. I would hear about your hands and moods. And I said, and I'd go to my sister and say, I got that. They'd say, go away. You don't have that, you know? I would tell my brothers, I have that. They say, Jimmy, you don't have that, you know? But I was looking, please tell me. I got what I'm hearing you say. I got that. The mood changes, the hot flashes. I'm having one now, you know? I have that. So anyway, while being Italian, I had blue-black hair and a Cadillac and a lot of gold. And I went to a cop's funeral in the street, and they played taps. I'm affected by taps. I'm affected by country and western. Your grandmother died, the puppy's dead. All that stuff affects me. You know, Ernie Tubb, it could bring me right. Anyway, I'm at the funeral. I'm standing there. I'm trying to be good, because I just had trouble with drinking. I have to go home, get my wife and my twins to go to the Bronx, to my mother's house, still live there. The cops are saying behind me, we're going to American Legion. You going? Yeah. Jenta going? I don't know. Hey, you going to American Legion? I don't know. I got to go home. I got to go to the Bronx. Okay. Tell me if you guys ever did this. Get out of the funeral, change your clothes. I was going to drive by the American Legion to see whose car's there. Did you ever look for a car? Like we're in the car business, right? I'm going to drive by and see whose car I know before I go home. So I drive my Eldorado past, and I saw some cars I knew. I walked in. Alcoholism. Da-da. They're singing doo-wops. There's free booze, free food. Salsiccia, manigota, alicia. Antipasta. Hey, give me the piece of cheese. You know, piece of bread. Hey, it's good to see you, Sonny. How's your sister? You know, the whole thing started all over. Let me tell you what I was wearing. I had on, if you're too young, ask the older people, a fake three-quarter Prince of the City pleather jacket. Quote, pleather is a mixture of plastic and leather. That was sold during the 1970s. It was called a 20-footer. In a bar, dark, nice coat. But don't come too close. In the winter, if somebody banged you on the arm, the arm could fall off and break in the street. And I walked in with my blue-black hair, my pleather coat, my fake Fats Domino jewelry, and I said, hey, I'm here. And I thought everything was okay. Later that night, I get in my car. I drive home. Well, you didn't drive the old Eldorados. I'll tell you what it's similar to. It's like sitting in the back of a normal car, thinking you're driving, looking at the hood ornament way up there. And you aimed them like a ship. That's what you had, the horn. You aimed it. And I went home. And I walked in the door, and my wife said something. And I wish I could change my story. I never can. Those of you who raised your hand earlier, you lie, you die. Live with what you got. This is what happened. I threw a loaded gun at her. I fell on the floor. She picked it up with two hands and said, Jimmy, you'll never throw anything at me again. And those twins screamed, don't shoot my daddy! Like that. And that's what happens in alcoholic families. That stuff. She ran out of the house to go get my big brothers. And listen to the voice of alcoholism. The next day, my wife said to me, Jimmy, last night I made up my mind that I was going to kill you. And I said, you know, I didn't aim the gun at her. She aimed it at me. This is one sick chick. Alcoholism. The week wasn't out. I used to work in plain clothes. Trust me, there's no plain clothes in 1970, you know? And we had a Cadillac, who had a phone company truck, and these guys said, Jimmy, we're going to have pizza. And I just told you about the gun. The week wasn't over. Told you about the gun. We meet on top of this parking structure. They open the pizza. They asked me what I wanted. I said, diet soda, diet soda. What do you want? Diet soda. Okay. They come back. They open it up. We're breaking the pizza apart. I said, did you get the soda? I worked in a city that didn't sell soda. They only had beer. Very strange city. These guys told me there was no soda. I'm not drinking the beer. I tell you what happened. But you're allowed to say this here. You know when you're eating the pizza, when you get down there to crust, how dry it gets? This is before Heimlich. I figured, let me have a little beer for the pizza. See? You get that. It had nothing to do with drinking. It was for the pizza, so I don't choke. So we started drinking the beer, then I'm getting off work, thank God, and I said to these guys, come with me, and we went to this place I go, and I walked in. Hey, what's his name back then? Who knows? Patsy. Patsy, how's your sister? How's everybody? Don't touch their money. They're with me. I didn't even know if my kids had milk, but that's what I was doing. And I went home again, and she said, if you're going to pull out again, I'm calling the cops. I'm an alcoholic, I said. You don't have to call the cops. I'll call them. And I did. I called them. I said, you better get over here right away. And they did. And they took me to a police station, not where I worked, but where I lived. Tell me how this happens. Guy on a desk, sergeant, his name is John Garino. He says, Jimmy, how would you like to go to a meeting with me on Monday? I said, sure, John. Could I have my gun back? He said, no, no. That Monday was March 8, 1980. How the heck, why was he working? How did that happen? The little time I have left to tell you about AA is just this. I came from what could have been called the old angry Irish men's group of AA. That's the group I was in. They were loud and they were fierce, and this is how it is. One of the first things I heard at a meeting was, you want to eliminate 85% of all your problems? Keep your mouth shut, mind your own business. Welcome to AA. I didn't listen to that. When you don't listen to that, you should see how your resume grows. It's really amazing. Something that simple. When I had 18 years in AA, I was diagnosed with kidney and bladder cancer. Hey, if you get cancer, what the hell? Would you just drink? Not necessarily. I've seen people in here go through terrible, terrible things. Their children, loss of homes. But you know what they say? Hey, the house burned down. I got insurance. Thank God I'm a member of the Atlantic Group. You know, that's all there is. Doesn't matter what happens. We do big good. Big good. Roll a bowling ball at us, we'll jump over it. But those marbles will knock us down every time. Where were you? You're late. I was at chemo. Okay, sit down. Try not calling on somebody when they had their hand up a little too long and see what happens, how we take that. Park too close to our car. Let us say hello to you, or you don't say back. You want to see trouble? I'll show you trouble. Drive in my lane. My lane is the third lane, just in case. I will blink at you so that you can move over. If you don't, there was a time in AA that I would go up next to you. Now you're going to Albany. Maybe you didn't want to go to Albany, but you're going now. You had your chance. That was then in AA, and this is now. My life, for me to tell you any more than the time I have left, and I won't tell you that much more, is my life is embarrassing. And you would hear the gratefulness if I began to tell you where I work and what I do. But you wouldn't hear much humility in it. I beat them so far. I've had so many people who've had what I had and they're gone. I came here tonight to do a job. My job was all of you that stood up. My prayer is that you stay. Nothing says you can come back here. My nephew Tommy was in and out. Welcome back, Tommy. He don't drink no more. He was 23 years old and he rolled a car. Nothing says you're coming back here. You got it now. You're sitting here now. You're listening to us now. You hold on to that seat. This is the best thing that has ever happened to me in my whole life. This is the drunken prayer that I said, and you said it too, if you look back. It was usually said in a bathroom. Remember when you could put your face on the floor, how nice and cold that was? Remember the cold water in the bowl, if you just put your face against it, it was like, ah. Remember when you got up on the floor and you looked in the mirror and you had like octagons on your face and you think, what the hell is this? You said that prayer, I said that prayer, and that's why I'm standing here now in front of Peggy and in front of the rest of you. I thank you. Stay.